Hi, and welcome to Unlimited, the podcast platform that gives voice to remarkable mothers and women from the Arab world to inspire, engage, and drive growth. In Unlimited Perspective series, we welcome inspiring women and mothers who embrace life with innovative perspectives and whose missions and achievements are making a mark. For this new episode of our Unlimited groundbreaking series, we're thrilled to welcome award-winning celebrity stylist, business mentor, author, and TEDx speaker, Kelly Lundberg. Upon arriving in Dubai as an Emirates crew member in 2003, Kelly quickly decided to hang up her wings and swap Emirates Pillar red box heels for stylish stilettos, taking a car loan and investing every dirham to launch the first ever styling service in the Middle East, Style Me Divine. Fast forward 15 years, and Kelly is one of the most diverse business entrepreneurs to have emerged from the styling world to date. Under her belt, branded of course, she has a styling workshop series for Harvey Nichols, as well as collaborations with Louis Vuitton and Gucci. Not to mention 1.5 million views on her YouTube channel and over 50,000 followers on Instagram. From styling a Saudi royal to walking the red carpet at the BAFTAs, Kelly was poised to sell her agency and launch the S Academy, a program that mentors aspiring stylists and lifestyle business owners on how to launch and grow independent businesses and personal brands. We couldn't be more excited to have Kelly as our special guest today to wrap up our podcast series for 2020. Stay tuned to discover how she was able to maintain and grow her personal and business success through every recession, while also overcoming a divorce and even testing positive for COVID. Hi, Kelly, and welcome to Unlimited. I'm so excited to have you with us.
It's so nice to sit down and have a cup of tea virtually and have a little bit of a chat. So really nice to be here.
A cup of tea for you and a coffee for me. We're all set. They say the sky is the limit, but for you, the sky was just the beginning as you literally took off from Dubai as a crew member. I know it seems so long ago, but why did you choose to join Emirates at the beginning of your career?
Oh, you know, I was young and I was in Scotland. It was the middle of winter and it was just like, it was an amazing opportunity. I didn't love the weather in Scotland, I'll be honest. It was quite miserable, quite rainy. And I wasn't ready to commit to a career yet. You know, my friends were still at university and I was like, I just still don't know what I wanted to do. And it just seemed like a great opportunity to travel. I actually didn't know where Dubai was on the map. And I remember my mum said to me, she was like, well, go and look it up. And I was like, I don't even know if you can drink in this country, you know, priorities when you're 20 years old. And I remember going into Princes Street in town in Edinburgh and went into what was then a very big Waterson's bookshop and went to the travel section and found Dubai. And I was like, okay, great. There's some bars there. There's some shops. There's some nightlife. Okay, applied for the job. And yeah, like 8 months later or 7 months later, the process was quite long to actually get the job. But yeah, arrived in April 2003, I think it was.
Whoa. Early ages, yeah. Pioneer in Dubai.
And I said, you know, I was only going to come for like a year and, you know, was based here and travel the world. And I ended up doing 2.5 years before I, you know, left and decided to set up my own business. But it was at a great time where, you know, just travel the world and the life in Dubai was just it was fun. It was different to it is now, you know, 20 years later. It's much more cosmopolitan. It was much smaller then and everyone kind of knew everyone, which is nice. But, you know, with growth in a city brings opportunities. And that's exactly what happened. And that's where it sort of led to the next steps of going, do you know what? I want to be part of this exciting entrepreneurial environment that Dubai cultivates. And it's contagious. And it's this kind of, you know, well, you can do anything. And certainly in those days, there was endless possibilities of services and businesses that hadn't reached the Gulf yet. So it was exciting times.
And you surely managed to identify and to make the most of those opportunities. But it's not easy to leave a secure job and a secure pay. So how did you prepare to take that leap, if you prepared at all?
I didn't. In fact, you know, I really didn't prepare myself. It was literally a leap of faith. you know, I think the one thing that kind of got me through it was I remembered at the time, so I took a loan to start my business. And the reason I did that was because in those days, the free zone asked you to have a set amount of money in the bank account in order for you to be 100% shareholder. So they were looking for 100,000 dirhams at 24 years old. I don't have that kind of money. So I took a loan from the bank. Well, actually, I took a car loan. Mm-hmm. And the bank manager said to me, you know, what kind of car are you buying? Like, this is a lot of money. And I sort of panicked because I was like, I'd never bought an expensive car in my life. So I was like, I'm buying a Porsche. And he said to me, oh, you have great taste. And 3 days later, the funds were in my bank account. And that was kind of what I used to set up my business and set up the trade license. You wouldn't get away with that now. But when it came to sort of, so I looked at this, oh, I've taken this loan for 100,000 dirhams and was 24. I had no idea how I was going to pay it back. But I also looked then around then, all my friends were finishing university with huge student debts. And I remember equating to at the time going, do you know what? If my business doesn't work, then I've taken this loan, but it's no different to all my friends who've gone to university for 4 years and are still coming out looking for jobs. So I was like, well, I'll just take this as a university of life if it doesn't work. So it, that part kind of didn't faze me. And I was like, I'll pay it back. Worst case scenario, I can go back to flying. It wasn't, I hadn't left on bad terms. I had a great record. I was, you know, progressed really fast up the cabin. So there's always a way. So, and I guess when you're 24, you're naive. So I didn't have dependents. I didn't have children. I didn't have an extensive shoe collection that I wanted to keep up then. You know, that's only come in the latter years. So my overheads were pretty small.
And being so young and venturing to a sector that was new to you, apart from your impeccable sense of style and not just in cars, right? How did you make the clients and investors to trust you?
Yeah, so I mean, I'd always worked in retail before I had been crew. So the fashion and style element was always there. It was the business that I needed to learn. And honestly, there is no better way learning business than actually doing it and making the mistakes yourself. I have a mentor in the very early days who really did help me with the process of, you know, who are you speaking to? Just asking the right questions, you know, and I didn't know he was a mentor at the time. He was just a friend who'd been in business a lot longer than I had. And he was like, what about this? And, you know, well, what are you going to do today? And, you know, it was hard. It was really hard. But I networked a lot. You know, I joined networking groups to understand the community a little bit better. And one thing I learned, which is still probably to this date, being one of the best things that anyone ever told me, was you need to write a press release. Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine who was crew said, you need to write a press release and send it to the press. And I was like, what's a press release? So I went home and Googled on my big computer, you know, at the time, you know, what's a press release? And I sort of read what it was. And together, she sort of helped me. I wrote some ideas and I wrote my first press release. And then I remember at the time, I didn't have any money. So I didn't have the money to go and buy all the magazines to get the phone numbers to contact all the magazines. So I went into Spinney's one day and sort of hid in the corner of the magazine shop and then just looked at all the magazines. And I was like, okay, ITP, Emirates Woman. And I looked at all the, so got all the telephone numbers. Then I went home, called the place and went, who do I need to speak to? Who's the editor of this? What's their email address? And it was, and that was kind of how it was. And I sent that out and I got featured in, I think, 6 or 7 different publications within the first quarter of opening or launching the business, should I say. So I had a 2-page feature in Emirates Woman. In those days, 7 Days was like the biggest red newspaper, and they did a weekly column for me, Steal the Look. You know, Ahlan nominated as one to watch business entrepreneur, you know, so I got a lot of coverage that way. And then my first client called me. She's like, I've read about you in a magazine. Will you come to my house and help me tidy my wardrobe? And I remember thinking then that wasn't quite in my business plan of going to people's houses and doing their closets. It was shopping, not the closet thing. And I'm thinking, sure, like, you know, and I'd read somewhere, you know, in the early days of business, say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. You know, 15, 20 years on, it's a very different story because you need to prioritize. But in those days, I was hungry. Mm-mm. And I said yes. And I remember she paid me in those days, it was, you know, 350 dirhams, maybe 300 dirhams. And I cleaned her closet and edited it, and what is now a very popular service, the wardrobe edit. And I took all her clothes to charity. And I was like, I can't believe I've just been paid to help someone tidy their wardrobe. This is great. Like, it was like I wasn't working. And that was kind of the start of it.
Those were the days of Style Me Divine, right?
Yes.
And what is the real essence of personal styling beyond the shopping experience? Because, I mean, you can shop for clothes, but how do you develop style? And even more, how do you instill style in a third person, in a client?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've realized as I've gone on to teach stylists is there's different kinds of stylists. And you get stylists who are incredibly creative and are brilliant for editorials and work for magazines and TV commercials. And I tried my hand at that. What I realized when you're working with people and styling them is, first and foremost, you have to like people. And not everyone really enjoys the interaction of understanding a person and, you know, what their hang-ups are and why don't they like wearing the color brown, or their husband hates prints. And it's not then just taking on board their imperfections and I don't like my tummy and I don't like my arms. It's then going, well, you know, I don't like this, or Dubai's dressy. Or this was one of the biggest things that I never encountered, was so many people who moved to Dubai in those days didn't have the clothes when you go out. So Dubai is a much dressier culture, I think, because many of the bars and restaurants are in five-star hotels. So there's just always that little bit more of an effort. You get taxis everywhere so you can wear nice shoes. You know, in Edinburgh, my high heel shoes don't get a look in. It's cobbled streets. They'd be wrecked. Whereas here, you're in air conditioning. It's marbled floors. Like, it's there's much more of an opportunity. And the other thing is you wear less clothing. So, you know, certainly in Europe, you know, in the winter, you have a nice big coat and then no one really sees what goes on underneath that. When you're here, you wear less clothing, so people notice it, or you notice it more. So combined with this dressier culture, what do we wear when you're wearing less clothing, and how do you feel good? And I do think there was a certain element where, you know, mums found it quite tough on the school run. They wanted to look the nice, but they struggled with the heat, certainly in the summer. You know, there was everything from, you know, people that were building their businesses, working on their personal brands, wanting to look the part, to, you know, people that were starting out again. I've just divorced. How do I go on a date? What should I wear? How do I feel good about myself? And I think that was the best part, was really the instant gratification that I got, was when someone put on an outfit and you just literally saw them light up.
Lighting it up.
And that to me is like, that's like, okay, I've just got the best job in the world. I love it.
Yes, and it's like in a movie. I feel you could write your own comedy show.
You know, there's been so many like standout little experiences that I've had. And there was this one lady in particular. And she said, you know, I'm so happy. I'm flying home. My daughter's about to have a baby and I'm going to the baby shower. But my ex-husband's going to be there with his new wife. I need an outfit for that. And she hadn't seen the ex-husband in, I don't know, like 5-7 years, whatever. She said, I just want to feel amazing. And we got her an incredible outfit. And I remember she messaged me at the end of the baby shower, a couple of weeks later. And she just said, thank you so much. I felt so good. That you can't buy, you know, or well, you can in clothes, but yes, in theory, yes. You know, that confidence, it's a big deal. So, you know, those are the moments that I loved.
How do you relate to different nationalities and different cultures when it comes to choosing the right attire to attend one of the many festivities that are celebrated in the region, that could go from Iftar to Diwali, Christmas and so on?
Yeah, and there are so many of those. You know, in the latter years, which I loved, a huge proportion, probably 80% of my clients were Emirati men. Oh. And I loved it because they were so used to dressing in traditional dress, kanduras, when they were here. But when they traveled, they loved to dress up. And it was like, so how do I look sharp for my business meetings? How do I look the part while I'm in Europe? I had another guy once who was getting married, and he was like, I don't want my wife to know that I've got no dress sense. So we went out shopping before his wedding and his honeymoon, and we prepped all the outfits before we went. And then he was sending me pictures when he was on his honeymoon
going, for validation.
Yeah, do you think this is okay? We're going to the museum together. And it just kind of got him over that sort of first hurdle. And then I'm quite sure she saw through it and was like, I'll take over. But yeah. So yeah. Whether it's festivities, cultural, they all bring their own sense of, you know, just enjoyment and new challenges. I remember another Emirati that I styled, and you know, he loved a session, and he was actually going on holiday with his four friends, and he used to go on holiday every year. And I said, aren't your friends going to notice that you've like stepped up your game? And he was like, yeah, I think they will. And I said, well, will you tell them that you hired a stylist, or will you tell them that you've got a new girlfriend? And he was so embarrassed, he was like, no, I'm going to tell them I've got a new girlfriend who helped me. He didn't want to let them know that he'd had a stylist helping him.
And those were the golden years in Dubai. But you've been able to sustain yourself and reposition yourself and your business, even during the recessions. What is your key learning, and what advice do you have to overcome these tough times?
I would say that I've always kind of had my fingers in a couple of different pies, in the sense that there's always been more than one revenue stream for me. It hasn't just always been styling. And styling's been the core part, and the vehicle of my business is style. But it's got so many different facets to it, depending on what someone or a company needs. And I found that has been incredibly important during the recession. So during the recession of 2009, I published my first book, and I was doing a lot of speaking, and I was going into organizations, and I was speaking at schools. So there was a bit of a revenue stream coming in there, where I was talking about entrepreneurship and the skills and what have you. So throughout that, and then, you know, as we kind of went into 2013-14, I really enjoyed training new stylists. So I realized if I wanted to have a bigger impact on people, I couldn't do the one-to-one. Like, I needed to have something that was more leveraged. And I created my first online product in 2014, which was the 7-step styling formula. It was the steps I took to running a business in style, which a lot of people look at maybe style as a hobby and think, can't really make money in that. Mm-hmm. And it's not true, you can. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of them missed out on the business side of styling, and that was the part that I loved the most. So since 2014, I was mentoring sort of stylists. And then by 2018, I launched my own academy. So we have membership and offer full on mentoring, where I'll guide someone through the process from A to B. So there's so many aspects in style that go beyond just style. You could be the best stylist in the world, but if no one knows about you, or no one knows about your business, and you don't have a marketing plan, then it doesn't matter if you're amazing, because you will have no clients. And I really love that part of helping people on a bigger process. Because if I mentored one person, then they would be helping hundreds of clients a year. And it was just kind of the ripple effect. So I loved that. And then that also gave me the framework to be able to go into organizations like department stores. So I've done training with Louis Vuitton on retail and style training. I've worked with Reese, I've worked with Marks and Spencer's, I've worked with Harvey Nichols and Bloomingdale's, to just bring their level of style within you know, sales associates and their personal shoppers. So again, back to the question of, you know, surviving through different challenging points of business, which they come to everyone, it is just having multiple multiple revenue streams. And this year, going through you know, a global pandemic, I was heavily mentoring, but I was not just mentoring stylists. And what I loved about the transition over the past sort of 12 months is mentoring entrepreneurs that are on a similar path to myself, that have a great business, but really need to work on their personal brand, or just become a bit more known within the digital space of who they are, their credibility, their expert status, and develop their brand new presence. So during lockdown, I was like, what am I going to do? I'm going to create an online course of all the things that I absolutely love in personal branding. So there's the elements of style, there's the elements of your digital presence, there's your collaterals, there's your website. There's so many people want to have a great first impression, but you go and look at their website and you're like, oh, don't know if I'd hire this person. Or, you know, another avenue for people to hear about you. And so often business owners hide behind their business.
Yes.
And they go, oh, but I don't want to be the face of my business, or it's not about me, it's about my business. But at the end of the day, and if this pandemic has taught us anything, that people want real connection, they want to deal with real people, and they need to know your story, and stories sell. So that's kind of been the natural evolution, where I still mentor stylists now, but I love working with entrepreneurs who are hungry to grow their business, and in turn, their personal brand becomes a huge aspect of that, because then you're promoting two aspects of revenue streams and businesses and stuff like that. So it's really good.
That's incredible, Kelly. And while you are the inspiration to so many, what have been your main sources of inspiration?
I mean, I've invested a lot in coaches over the years. So my personal development bill certainly outweighs my clothing bill, I would say. I hired my first coach during the recession, and it was part of the Tony Robbins coaching program more than 10 years ago. And it was really the best thing I ever did. And for anyone who's on the fence about going, oh, do I get a coach? Should I get a mentor? 100%. And if I was to actually work out, and I think I have done a video where I've worked out how many coaches I've had, or how much I've spent over the years. But not just that, I think probably one of the biggest sources of inspiration for me is listening to a podcast in the morning. I love being able to have someone in my ear that's friendly, that's talking about business, that really just gets me inspired. For me, that is a huge source of inspiration that gets me going in the day. And the morning routine, like, I really need to have a morning routine, or the day dramatically goes downhill.
Interesting point, the morning routine, considering that during COVID, all our good habits and routines lost every sense.
Yeah, there's definitely a huge aspect now of the sort of sustainability. What can we rework? Do we have in our wardrobe? One thing that I think has been a little bit of a mistake, that people have got far too comfortable in loungewear, and in turn not feeling good about themselves. So I was in a lockdown on my own. Like, I didn't have any company. I wasn't living with anyone. And the first few days, like, I was like, oh yeah, you know, a whole month, I don't have to do my makeup and don't have to dress up. And, you know, I thought this was brilliant. And 3 days in, I just felt like horrible. I didn't feel nice. Every time I walked past a mirror, it was like, oh, you look a mess. And when you start telling yourself that kind of thing, it started to have a real impact on me mentally. So I then, from pretty much the third day into lockdown, was like, do you know what, I am dressing every day that I'm going to work. Okay, the type of thing slightly differentiated from the perspective of everything I wore had an elasticated waistband, because let's face it, jeans aren't comfortable. So I wore loads of skirts and t-shirts, and just, I made an effort to wash my hair and do it for no one else but me,
and for yourself.
Yeah. And I think that started to come about. And I know a lot of people have, you know, invested in sort of their skincare routine. And, you know, one of the things I did, so I actually had COVID back in September.
Oh.
And I was in, so it was asymptomatic. I didn't have any symptoms. I actually didn't know I had it until I went to fly home and I went for the test. And they said, oh, sorry, you've tested positive. And one of the things, I was like, oh, wow, I cannot leave the house for 2 weeks, like, not even to go for a walk to the shops, nothing. What am I going to do? And I was like, well, what worked for me really well in the lockdown? I was like, okay, my morning routine, doing my workout, listening to a podcast. And then I learned how to do makeup. So I was like, right, okay, let me watch YouTube tutorials. Like, all these things that I'd said I wanted to do at some point and never done. I'm like, okay, you can't go out anywhere. No one's going to see you. Let's practice it.
Make the most of it.
And that's what I, yeah, Totally.
And what about that awareness that we've all developed about having a wardrobe full of clothes that we don't really need? Do you think that it will really bring us to buy less, but more cautiously and making more sustainable choices?
Sort of back to that, yes, there is the buy smart, buy carefully, buy things that you like, but buy things that make you feel good and don't keep them for special occasions. Wear them.
Throughout your life, Kelly, your professional life, out of all the projects and people you've been involved with, what has been the most special experience, the one that you treasure the most?
Oh, there's been so many and they've been so different for so many reasons. Certainly work at getting the call from Louis Vuitton and working with them on, you know, a 5-week retail training project was like, you know, in terms of like brand calling you, I was like, oh, you know, that was really exciting to, you know, something I say, 29 years old, I wrote my first book. You know, my English teacher had told me that I would never be able to study higher English. And, you know, it was a real big deal at school to study it. And I passed just, but, you know, at 29, I sent my English teacher a copy of my book, my published book. So that was, you know, there's been so many kind of different things. Seeing the success that some of my stylists have, that they say, you know what, if you hadn't helped me through my business, I wouldn't have been able to have done this or service this client. So there's not just one. And, you know, we'll hang up and I'll be like, oh, damn, there was that one. Like I worked with a Saudi prince. Like that was amazing to work with royalty and have that experience from a styling capacity. And you know, even just one of my mentees who's got an incredible business, not a stylist, has said since we've worked together over the past year, her business has doubled. Wow. Like that to me is like, you know, so I can't just pick just one.
Of course, of course. And on the other side, did you ever feel underestimated or underappreciated?
By people or myself?
That's a good point. Let's do both.
Did I ever feel underestimated by other people? Certainly in the early days, absolutely. And that's definitely drove me. You know, I think people really did kind of underestimate me from a perspective of being young, yes. Maybe blonde, being naive in business. You know, even from the teacher saying, oh, you know, your business won't matter. And I know a lot of people kind of thought when I left Crew, oh, she's never going to succeed or let her have a year of doing what she's doing. And, you know, so I do think a lot of people kind of underestimated in that sense. With myself, have I ever underestimated myself? There's probably been a few times where I've been like, oh, that's gone better than I thought it has. a lot better. I think I, at a period where I probably lost a lot of confidence and underestimated myself was going through a divorce and doing that in Dubai and going, right, okay, moving house, not having the support in the sense of a roof over my head. If things didn't work, it was like, you have to make it work. So I think in the beginning, I underestimated my confidence and being able to do it because going through something personal does knock your confidence.
And how did you raise back up your game?
I got a coach.
Aha! Bless him.
They've always come at sort of real pivotal times and really helped me through certain months. And that was a really pivotal time in my career and business. It was when I really decided that I wanted to shift much more into mentoring. It's when I wanted to sell the agency. It's really where I wanted to focus on the next level of what I was doing.
Did you ever consider going back home, or you were confident that you would have found once again in Dubai your land of opportunities?
Yeah, certainly for now. Like I love Dubai and I love the opportunities that it brings. I enjoy the entrepreneurial vibe that it has. So when I go home to my hometown, like I love Edinburgh, I love Scotland, I love the UK, but because I don't have a community there in the business sense, I do feel I miss that. Whereas I come here and all my friends are in business, whereas I don't have that when I go back. I mean, never say ever. I have a partner who lives in Edinburgh now, so we're doing long distance.
Wow, so you survived long distance and social distancing. What a combo.
It was a long socially distanced relationship, but certainly during COVID. But at the moment, you know, we're just trying to work what works best for both of us. And I'm happy here. And I certainly don't see that changing in the immediate future.
And I know that you just celebrated a huge milestone. So happy belated birthday.
I felt like it was happening to someone else.
Why?
I think because I remember my parents' 40th. I was at my mum's 40th and I was at my dad's 40th. And I always felt that that was really old. Sorry, mum. And, you know, it just seemed different. Like when they were 40, it seemed old. And I was like, but I don't feel 40. It's happening to someone else that didn't feel like it was happening to me. It was very surreal, very surreal.
Well, you certainly don't look 40. And do you feel that you've become the person who you were dreaming of as a child, or possibly an even better version of that person?
Absolutely. Because I think if you'd said this, I'd have been like, oh my God, that's like the dream life. So even though I always had big dreams, I think when you look back, you're like, wow, if I told my younger self this, then I would never have believed it type thing, even though I was always quite passionate and driven to be able to do things. So yeah, now what for the next decade do I need to achieve? That's my big questions.
Do you have an answer for that already?
I'm working through it at the moment. It was, I think turning 40 was also like, wow, okay, so what am I going to do next? And what do I feel that I need to do next? And what should I focus on? And what do I enjoy doing? So there was a lot of those questions. So I've been spending some time kind of myself, and I love this time of year to go through my Plaid Power booklet. I go through my goals. I reflect on the year, what worked, what didn't work. What do I need to stop doing? What do I need to focus on? And what makes me happy? So I'm kind of going through that, and probably one of my favorite weeks for doing that is in between Christmas and New Year, where nothing really happens. It's like all the festivities are over. I tend to take down my tree, I think, like that week, because I'm like, okay, Christmas is done and I just want to get on with the new year. And I'll probably spend a lot more time then going, what are my goals for the next quarter, the next 6 months, the next 12 months, and then look at something longer plan for the next 3 years.
I wonder, how do you remain true to yourself? You seem so genuine, but with nearly 51,000 followers on social media watching you, don't you feel exposed? And how do you determine what to share or not to share online and remain true to yourself, despite for sure the planning and strategy that goes behind it?
I mean, I think I've got better as I've got older, in the sense that one of the biggest things I realized, so I did a course with Tony Robbins 2 or 3 years ago called Date with Destiny. And for me, that was a real big shift, because it kind of really helped me understand my values, what's important to me. And one of the biggest things was that I lived this life that I wanted everyone to like me, which I think everyone does. Everyone wants everyone to like them. But the truth is, we don't like everyone. So why do you think everyone should like you? And then when I sort of dropped this, stop trying to please everyone to be liked and just be myself and accept that not everyone of the 50,000 people follow me because they like me, then it's okay. And then when I got kind of comfortable with that feeling of, you know, not everyone's going to like me, it's okay, then I felt like, hey, I'm going to be me. And if you like me, you like me. And if you don't, you don't. I'm okay with it. And maybe that comes with age. Maybe that came with, you know, being happier in myself and, you know, gone through the divorce and, you know, knowing who more I was. But certainly not worrying what other people think about me has been a real big game changer, in the sense of how I come across on social media. And it's like, be honest, because I don't think a lot of people are really honest. But I also won't share every single thing that I do, because I think there is an oversharing as well. So I don't, you don't see what I have for breakfast every morning and lunch.
Oh,
and dinner.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Not my vibe. And I found the things that I actually enjoy engaging with, you know, I really love at the end of the week, having an end of week catch up. I enjoy asking people questions. So I'm starting to find the things in the engagement. I had this guy actually that I did this question thing the other day, and I was like, ask me a question about style and business. And loads of people came to my DMs, asked me a question, and then I shared it on Instagram. And this one guy said to me, oh, I'm looking for an investor for a business. Have you got any ideas? And I was like, well, actually I do. So I said, DM me again. And I put him in touch with someone that could maybe help him. And he sent me this email back. Yeah, I didn't expect you to come back on social media and share something. Like he was really taken back by it. And I was like, well, why not? I asked a question, I answered it. Why would you not do that? And he was like, people aren't like that. Wow. I was like, oh, well, I am.
Well, it is incredible and surely not expected, especially coming from social media.
We're here to serve. We're here to do our best. And if I go to bed at night going, you know what, I'll help someone, or, you know, someone feels better today because I inspired them to wear an outfit in a different way, like, that makes me feel good. I always have this goal that I wanted to inspire a minimum of 5 people every day to take action. Mm-hmm. In any form of action, whether that was I'm going to call someone because they've watched my TEDx talk and feel like they need to make that call to someone because that was the theme of my TEDx talk, or whether it's, you know, oh, I'm going to style my outfit this way, or I'm going to go and do a good deed for someone. That was kind of always my goal. So I try to do it. And you don't always know if you help 5 people, but it's a start.
Well, it's a great start, and not everyone is so positive. To which point, how do you protect yourself from the haters? Because being so successful and popular doesn't make you feel exposed to also a lot of criticism and negativity.
Yeah, I won't lie, when people say something that's not nice, it hurts more than the 10 people that say nice things. But I have to say, I'm really fortunate. I don't put out controversial stuff enough that people come back with really horrible things. So I'm quite fortunate that I don't get that.
Lately, across the social media and the press, we've seen you wearing a beautiful black tuxedo. And I'm asking this because just last week we interviewed Bria Prestige, and it's amazing to see how nicely connected are female entrepreneurs in the region. So how did you meet and how did you get involved in this project?
I'm trying to think actually how we first met. And I think it was maybe an event that we met at. So again, maybe out and about at an event. And then she asked me to speak at her Deals in High Heels event. So I did a Dress for Success presentation to 100 of our women who attended, which went really well. And we've just always had sort of a relationship that's, you know, supporting other women. She has, I've been on her podcast, I've sent clients, you know, there's just always been kind of like a nice supportive relationship. And then she'd asked me to be part of this. We've earmarked a black tuxedo suit, which I'm like, all over, fits beautifully. Like, it's such a nice cut. And yeah, I honestly wish her every success. Every single suit's got a little bit of personality behind it. And I think mine's the best, but that's because I love it.
Well, it's a perfect time of the year, right? Isn't it perfect for the festivity season as well?
Yeah, and it's just timeless. Like, a black tuxedo you could still wear in 10 years' time. So provided you don't keep gaining weight, in the sense, but yeah, in theory you could still wear it, keep wearing it.
And I love the name. I believe you called it Inspire.
I did, yeah, my favorite word. That print just says Inspire.
And from Inspire to Unlimited, 2 big words and 2 big concepts. So our paramount question, what does Unlimited mean to you?
Unlimited means to me just endless opportunities. For me, really just unlimited, endless opportunities to be able to do anything, be anyone, help anyone, just to do anything. And that, to me, is certainly a feeling that living in Dubai, the energy it carries is that sort of unlimited feeling as well.
Love it. Absolutely love it, Kelly. And I love to pose it here with Inspire as your motto and our mission. Thank you, Kelly, for joining Unlimited, and we wish you all the very best for this end of year festive period. This is actually going to be our last podcast interview for this first season, so it was even more special. Thanks again, Kelly. Thank you.
Ooh. we end on a high. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm sorry for all the people running around the house.
There'll be lots of behind the scene funny sketch.
Well, I guess it just makes it real.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found it inspiring and fulfilling. Please subscribe to Unlimited on your favorite podcast app so you won't miss out on our next stories. To learn more about our content, please log on to our website and follow us at unlimited.me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and help us building a truly unlimited community. Thank you.